Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Breyer Riley. It just seemed to fit.
Aww.
Did it really?
And also with us is Spencer, sheriff who got killed in the third quarter.
Terrible!
A nameless sheriff.
Terrible.
Wow. You know, he was black, too, so that's just even more of a low blow.
I didn't say that. You said that.
You're still referencing it. What are you talking about?
We are talking about the movie that just debuted this past weekend, James Gunn's Brightburn. So stick around, because we're going to get into that conversation and dive a little deep into that. But before we do, Chad, hit him with them credits.
Yeah, let me crack some knuckles and stretch a little bit. And yeah, we know all too well where we came from, which is why we like to remind you that the Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios, lest they imprison us or destroy us in other unsightly ways. New episodes rain down from the heavens each Wednesday morning and stream on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
If you think it's time for the talk, no, not that talk.
Ew!
Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Also, if you need to hunker down and hide away from bad news for a few days, you have plenty of content on our episode library to keep you company. It's available all on our website, filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got so many episodes right now. We are coming out the ears with episodes, and it's a good thing. Over 160 episodes on our website. We are super excited, and we have a special announcement at the end of this episode in terms of future episodes, so stick around through the whole entire conversation, because we got something to say at the end of it. But before we do, we
got
to talk about
this. We got nothing to say during it, so don't get your hopes up.
Is that how you I'm glad you're telling me now. We didn't get a chance to talk about it before we went on the air, so I'm glad you're airing out your grievances now so I can hear everything that I'm going to be expecting to come, because we are going to be talking about Brightburn. That is the movie that has been kind of being hailed as the alternative Superman film. It's being hailed as the film that is the game changer to all comic book films. It's an interesting film, and we obviously saw it as something worthy to talk about here.
I mean, we talk about superhero movies all the live long day,
we do.
So
it just made sense to us.
Why not have the supervillain movie conversation?
So before we dive into this lively conversation, Chad, give us that official synopsis goodness.
I will. What if a child from another world crash-landed on Earth, but instead of becoming a hero to mankind, he proved to be something far more sinister? My lower register really wasn't there for that one. Far more sinister.
Better.
How about that?
Thank you, Venom. Produced by James Gunn and Kenneth Hoang and directed by David Yaroveski, the film stars Elizabeth Banks, David Denman, Jackson A. Dunn, Matt Jones, and Meredith Hagner. For those who are unsure as to what role James Gunn plays in this film, he is a producer on the film, and he essentially is the quote-unquote top-billing name that's attached to this to really sell it.
So yeah, I mean, for years it was the untitled, what they call it, like the untitled James Gunn horror movie or something like that for a long time.
Yeah, and honestly, like as soon as it started debuting, the biggest name you saw on every single trailer was James Gunn from the visionary of the Guardians of the Galaxy and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, if you're wondering in what aspect he participated in, he was a producer.
And if you're expecting Guardians of the Galaxy, you are sadly mistaken.
Extremely mistaken.
Ain't gonna happen.
And just for a little bit of a backstory, before director James Gunn claimed worldwide fame with the said Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy films, he actually made his name in the horror comedy genre. So before he was doing Marvel and Guardians of the Galaxy, he had done a film called Slither, back in the 2000s, which was a really interesting film starring Nathan Fillion as one of the characters, or as one of the actors, not a character. But among that, he's done a couple other things. He's been a producer on several different projects, just like the Belkin project.
Is that the one with like the Battle Royale and the office place or whatever?
It's like a corporate like free for all kind of thing.
Corporate Hunger Games.
Exactly. Like, it's really weird. Like, oh, you have to kill somebody in order for no one else to die in this time or whatever, something, whatever. Speaking of numbers, budget for this film was around $6 million estimated, and its opening weekend did $7.8 million, which isn't bad. I mean, it got back all its budget. Worldwide totals as of today is around the arena of $17.4 million. So it's recouping quite a bit. You know, needless to say, on a $6 million budget and already, what is that, almost tripling it. So,
yeah, they're lucky it was such a low number.
So I'm gathering.
Sorry, did I say that out loud?
I'm gathering from your quite bright optimism here that you actually enjoyed the film.
Loved it. It was, I can honestly say with no dishonesty in my tone or my bones, this movie made me respect Superman so much more.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the overall story or like the Man of Steel Superman?
Like just the iconic character of Superman. No particular movie, no particular story thread in the comics, but just what works as a superhero, in my opinion, does not work as a supervillain. Like, supervillain as the point of the story, the whole goal. And I know he had, like, the whatever, pulling his strings, you know, the other mental
whatever that
thing
was
going on. But, yeah, it just, it totally, like, it totally works for Superman. And in my book, it totally flopped here. So not to knock any of the attempted artistry or whatever, but it was just like, eh.
So just so we reiterate this, this is going to be a spoiler review. We're going to be talking about a lot of the stuff that did and didn't work. It's a small enough movie. I think it'll be fine if we talk about spoilers. I don't think anybody's going to really be...
Yeah, like 12 people saw it, so it's cool.
12 people saw it. Even each one of them had $1 million.
12 people in each market, dude, okay?
So
it's like 4,017 people.
So you've been warned. We are doing spoilers. I like that was almost like a very good Shaggy voice. That was a Raggy.
Well, you would. I don't know how to do an actual Shaggy voice, which is a lot higher pitched, but
it's close.
I don't even want to attempt it.
So
Scoob.
So. The thing
That's
with this
the
film,
best thing to come out of this movie for me.
Scoob. So, with that said, obviously there is some type of interest in this film. And it, honestly, I mean, if we're being brutally
a lot of intrigue,
honest,
tons of intrigue going into it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we're brutally honest, a lot of it is because of James Gunn's name being attached to it.
100%.
That's really probably like the biggest thing. 99% of it is probably that. Let's be honest.
It's the biggest plus and the biggest negative.
True. Very true. Because outside of Guardians of the Galaxy, there's not much else.
Mainstream audiences don't know. I've not seen the Belkin experiment.
No, neither have I.
I didn't want to. It looked like a train wreck of just like fake blood flying everywhere.
Yeah, and
much... I mean, it looked like somewhat funny. At least it had some sense of like ironic humor or something going on, at least by the trailer. This movie, even in the trailer, it's like, there's no funny in this. This is just dark and creepy.
True. And similar with Slither is very much in that vein of horror comedy. Very graphic violence type humor and comedy, but still nevertheless, it's identified on IMDb and Wikipedia as a comedic horror film.
I think it's safe to say that the stuff that James Gunn retroactively got in trouble for with Disney is because this is how his mind works. Like, it's this mashup of, like, two seemingly appropriate things, and then you put them together and it's just gross and weird and not okay. And it's that kind of like mental depravity that was present in those old tweets that he got in trouble for. He was fired for several months. And then eventually, like, you know, the whole I believe in the redemptive cycle. You know, he was able to earn his way back into the good graces, saying, hey, I was young, dumb, wanted to make a name for myself. Yeah. I didn't behave appropriately. I've already apologized for it before you fired me. And I really, like, if I could take it back, I would. And so they hired him back. And now we get to have more Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
True. Very true. And that's, mind you, that's a good thing. I guess with the right, what is that, right set of boundaries or the right type of accountability within that structure of what he's doing, he works well. It's certain realms, like for me, Slither was funny, but there was a lot that was just like, man, there's a lot of blood in this. There's a lot of chopping of bodies and destruction and macerating of, and mind you, it's very, there's a point to it, mind you. There's a story, but it's still like,
is there? I don't know.
So, swinging it back to Brightburn.
Oh, yeah, Brightburn, right, yeah.
That's right.
That's the movie that we saw.
It's true. Chad had mentioned it earlier. We do tend to talk a lot on here about comic books. About comic books! We talk about comic book movies and a lot of their impact in, you know, the cinema now and movie theaters and what's pretty much being hailed as the new action film. Like, most of the comic book films are ultimately becoming the next generation of, like, action films, you know, plain and
simple. It's a new baseline, yeah.
Exactly. So, coming into this, you're expecting a type of similar structure in terms of, like, okay, this is supposed to be a what-if storyline of what if when, you know, Superman lands, you know, Clark Kent, Kal-El, however you want to perceive it, he actually is a little jerk and decides to totally become obsessed with his power as opposed to, like, using the morals and the things that his parents...
No. Let me stop you right there. They already did this story, that story, and it was good. It was called Superman Red Sun.
Yes.
Where he landed in Russia instead of America, and it was like, well, what would be different about Superman if he grew up in Russia instead of America? This movie is more like, what if Superman landed and was just gross?
What?
Like, just twisted and depraved. Like, it's not like he became obsessed with his powers. Like, he's a funky little dude.
No, you're so true. And it's talking about Red Sun, because I'm glad you brought up Red Sun.
And he's what, 12 years old in this movie? 10
he
years
turns
old,
12 11, in this movie.
Whatever, yeah. So sad.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that's exactly what I said to Spencer right after we left the theater. I'm like, you know, they did something similar to this in the comics, and they did it so well that honestly, they could, if DC ever decided, they could ultimately just say, all right, that's canon, and it'll work.
Well, I mean, DC, the DCEU, right, the extended universe.
Yeah.
The name that they decided for the cinema stories, they're not a continuous whole. Like, they blatantly came out and said, we're not going to do what Marvel's doing. We're going to do something different. So, yeah they could totally do that. It could be its own standalone story if they wanted it to be.
Yeah. Which, Spence, have you read Red Sun?
No, you already asked me that.
Well, I know, but I wanted to get it, like, on record here to make sure everybody
knew. Wanted it. Like, permanently part of the permanent internet record of audio files of all those podcasts that we talk about all the time, like our own.
Let it be known that Spencer Williams has yet to read Red Sun.
What kind of nerd shaming is this? This is ridiculous.
I'm not shaming you, but I would recommend it.
Yeah,
it is really well done.
So you haven't read it, but you are familiar with it.
Yeah. Superman grows up in Russia. I knew that before you guys talked about it, and that's about all I knew.
Okay, well, ultimately, he grows up, obviously, with the communism at the time and everything going on. He was taught to be very hungry with his power, use it in the way that was very negative. He ultimately becomes a dictator and a rebel force led by a Lex Luthor type character. I don't know if it is Lex Luthor.
I don't remember the details. It's been more than 10 years since I read that thing. Around 10 years, probably. I don't know how old it is. It's been a while.
Ultimately, what happens is there's this big battle. He wins. He ends up destroying, you know, causing harm to the planet. His offspring utilize all the resources. They end up calling it like a new Krypton. And then ultimately, the planet ends up exploding while this ship containing a little baby shoots off into space.
Basically, thank goodness Superman was born or landed in America in a cornfield in Kansas.
That's very
and
true.
Wasn't a twisted, demented little sicko like this boy.
So, expectations. Let's talk about expectations before we talk about how sick this child is. Because in all honesty, Chad's not wrong. expectations. Spence, let's go with you first. I want to know, what were you expecting when you were coming into this film? What were some of the things you were wondering if you were going to see, if you weren't going to see?
Well, really, I think I was just surprised that this wasn't something lame that DC was doing in their own, like, universe. Because this seemed straight up their alley for mismanagement. but, yeah, when I found out it had nothing to do with them, I was actually very interested in what someone else's take would be on, like, a Superman-esque, like, kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just, like, open to the possibilities, especially with James Gunn, like, attached to the project. So
yeah.
I was kind of hyped for this movie.
Oh, there you go. What about you, Chad?
I was not open to the possibilities in this movie. The last trailer that I saw was in the 25.5-minute trailer preview scroll last week in front of John Wick Chapter 3
right.
That I was like literally falling asleep before the movie even started. And one of the trailers that they showed was a longer preview trailer for Brightburn, which I hadn't seen that much. And that was overwhelming. I was like, oh, this is not going to be okay. Like, this kid is never going to become good. At least in the earlier ones, it was like, okay, he goes astray. He has, like, a whole period of, like, figuring it out or whatever. Yeah. And then, like, maybe there's hope. But that trailer made it very clear that that's not the kind of movie this is. There is no redemptive cycle in this story. And I'm a big fan of redemptive cycles. So
yeah.
My mind was a closed book. I am not even ashamed to admit it. I am such a Captain America, Superman, super fanboy. Like, do the right thing every time you can to all the people you can all the time. And sometimes you're going to flop, but it's okay. So this kind of thing is definitely... it's up somebody's alley, but it's not mine. It's the alley that I walk in the opposite direction of. And I knew that.
So, which reminds me. Okay, so you mentioned before we went on the air, I said, Chad, did you get a chance to see the movie? And
yeah.
You said, that is a question best waited for until we start the show. So I am asking you now, when did you see the movie? And, pretty much just when did you see the movie?
Around about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
See, that's what I was thinking.
I was thinking that too. I'm like, he probably saw it today. You just saw it, so it's still fresh.
It is still trying to destroy my life, and I am continuing to fight the good fight, and I'm not letting it do that.
Oh man. All right, so you might have a better remembrance than I do.
But did you forget it already?
I was trying. So. So jumping into the film, obviously this is a type of Superman story, a play on that, if you will. You're introduced to the young boy who is Brandon Byers or Byers? Yeah, it is Byers. Who's played by Jackson A. Dunn. He is this Clark Kent character. The film actually starts with the parents kind of just having parent time, and
you're making this as awkward as the talk.
Thank you. Thank you for this moment right now.
So the parents have been wanting to have kids, and all of a sudden, like, the wife hears a sound, and they hear this large meteorite and it crashes, and they're like, oh, what in the world? And then it kind of jumps forward in time, And so you're introduced to Tori Breyer, which is Elizabeth Banks' character, the mom, and Kyle Breyer, who's the dad, played by Pam's ex-boyfriend.
Right, David Denman.
David Denman.
What was his name on The Office?
It was...
Oh. Has to be. I had it earlier. I was like, oh, that's... And then I forgot. Charlie?
Was it Charlie?
I don't remember.
Roy. Anyway,
Roy, that's it.
Mm. So
not
yeah.
Charlie.
Roy
not,
from The Office. He moved on. He left Pan in the dust and moved to...
And here, this is the thing. James Gunn.
Uh-huh.
Elizabeth Banks, who does great in comedy roles.
Yeah.
And David Denman, who did a fine job as Roy. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot required of him necessarily, no. But obviously comedic background.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Why? You know what? I don't know. The last thing I remember seeing him in was in 27 Hours, I believe. Which he was co-starring in with John Krasinski, wasn't he?
Jim from The Office?
Yeah, with Jim. Yeah. So Roy and Jim had to work together. I don't really think I've seen him in much else since then. But I would probably venture to say he needs the work. You know.
Just. But not him specifically. I mean, like, why? The signals.
Oh.
The signals to our brains that there's going to be something funny or enjoyable.
Right. You're right. Like, you're expecting, like, because in all honesty, I'm going to be totally honest. One of the things that I was expecting with the film was I was hoping a solid balance of, like, that comedy and horror. Like with Slither. Now, mind you, I actually enjoyed Slither. It was one of his earlier films. It was one of those types of movies that's a lot like the creature feature, if you will.
Critters. Fun trivia. Huh. The background, I think, probably with David Roy from The Office and James Gunn, producer of this movie, is that James Gunn used to be married to Pam from The Office in real life.
They're oh, really?
Kids together and everything, yeah.
As in used to be as Jenna in Fisher? Not anymore?
No, yeah, no. They've not been together for quite a while, but they were, I believe they were married while she was on The Office. So he and David probably have known each other since those days.
You've
at the
mentioned
very
that.
Least.
That's yeah. right. That's right. That's right. You're right.
So just trivia, because my brain wants to do something productive in the world. Something lighthearted.
You're right.
So you're that may be how they knew each other. Like, that might be why he was cast, because they've probably known each other for a long time.
Well, true. And especially with him.
I believe Gunn even directed some of the episodes in the earlier seasons of The Office. Like one
that
or
would
two
make
of
sense.
Them. I think he did.
But also, well, in similar fashion with Elizabeth Banks, Elizabeth Banks has been in a lot of his older films. Like, she was prominent in Slither. So just to kind of bring that up again. So there's history there as well. And it's true. Like, one of the expectations I was hoping for with this particular film is a good balance of, like, the horror and the comedy aspect, like a lot more fun, ridiculous things, almost like, what's his name? A lot similar to, like, how the Evil Dead second and third one.
Like Bruce Campbell?
Yeah, but what's his name? Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi does a really kind of silly take on horror when he does his horror movies. Because he's also done some of the, what is that? He's done a couple things in the horror genre itself.
Spider-Man 3.
That is definitely in the horror genre.
That dance.
But he did, like, Dark Man, which has some, you know, a little bit of the comedic aspects. He's done Drag Me to Hell. Drag Me to Hell has that balance of comedy and horror as well. There's a few other things. But needless to say, he tries to do that balance well enough to where you're not just coming in with the fear of just being scared all the time in the film. He makes complete breaks so that you can take a second to laugh and whatnot. And
it's got a campy kind. I mean, even the Spider-Man trilogy, the Tobey Maguire trilogy, all of that had a certain campiness to it. Even when it was trying to be serious, it's sort of like you can't help it.
Oh, completely. I agree.
James Gunn, I think, is a step beyond that in terms of he actually can help it. He leans into the comedy when it's appropriate. But I think I was reading something today. He didn't actually even write this movie.
No.
His cousin and his brother did.
Yeah. Exactly. Brian and Mark Gunn were writers on this, which is why I'm saying this film relied so much. And I didn't know at the time, honestly. I didn't know how far removed he was from the film other than just being a producer. Which now after I've seen it, I'm like, yeah, this doesn't really have a lot of his fingerprints on it, but, you know, marketed as such, right? So I think for me going into the film, that was like my main expectation, hoping to see some kind of balance, some type of like lightness to a lot of the horror aspect, because the trailers are like heavy on the horror. There's nothing at all that happens in the trailers that lets me even believe one second that there's kind of some type of, you know, moment of silliness or whatever.
Spencer, so. You look like you disagree.
No, I'm listening. And I guess I'm confused on how you came to this conclusion that there'd be a comedic aspect.
So in James Gunn's previous films, not to mention even in his Guardians of the Galaxy films, he has a really great job of being able to balance some of the heaviness with some light comedy or even some light jokes. That's why, like, in the midst of everything that was happening at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you know, you have the whole, like, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. You know, that's funny. And then it dives right back into something heavy. And it balances, though. It gives you a moment to where you can recoup all the things that have been happening and kind of regain your emotional composure. And then you're dropped right back into the bucket.
Yeah, it's more of a counterpoint. I mean, Guardians is a mainstream film, so it plays up the humor a lot more. And that's a good thing. I mean, that suits that audience. But I think even in something that's mostly dark, you use comedy sometimes to counterbalance.
Yeah.
And give those breathing moments.
Yeah. Because without that, then, I mean, especially...
I mean, even last week, John Wick, Chapter 3.
Oh, yeah.
For as relentless as the violence and the adrenaline-fueled whatever and all of it, the pursuit and everything was, there were a ton of funny moments, you know, like what's-his-face's fanboying and all that kind of stuff. Like, it balances the whole plate. It balances the flavors on the plate and doesn't have you just only eating one type of entree. That's a bad analogy given
but
the amount of blood in this movie.
Which
he doesn't eat anybody.
Which, mind you, just in case anybody's wondering, that's less than 162. So just... Yeah, for those playing at home. So what about that part were you kind of confused by, Spence?
No, that was the explanation. I was listening.
Well, see, here's the thing. We're in VGB Studios, and one of the great things that producer and host Corey has in this studio is there's a huge screen to my right, and I'm sitting at the producer's desk, and to my right, I can't even see Spencer. Spencer is blocked by this screen.
I can see Spencer, and I think Spencer has a lot to say. Well, I think we need to give him the mic. We need to give him the floor. Spencer,
take it away.
Wait, what am I talking about? What?
So we're moving beyond expectations, okay. Right? So Eddie and I thought, hey, maybe there's going to be a healthy amount of comedy to balance out all the gross.
Yeah.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. That's
perfect.
Hoping. Your expectation was that it was reasonable to expect no comedy.
Yeah, well, normally, like, I know sometimes they do a poor job of it, but, like, a trailer kind of sets the tone for the film.
Totally.
And so this one was just, like, all of the trailers were, like, the same level of dark to me. So I was not expecting, like, there to be a whole lot of comedy. I was just kind of expecting to get on, like, this mineshaft cart and we're just going straight down.
This mineshaft cart going straight down. Well, he's not wrong.
Would you say your expectations were met?
Kind of. I'll say, yeah, kind of.
Kind of. Okay. Just because, like I said, it would be one thing if it was just like, okay, this movie, it's doing this, this and that, it's got this, it's got that, it's these things. Then it says, produced by visionary director James Gunn. And immediately I think, okay, James Gunn has a hand in it. Knowing James Gunn adds his comedic flair to it because he likes to be silly. You look at his previous, previous filmography, he's got films that have a balance of comedy and or horror or some other aspect. So for me, it was a misstep on the people who made the trailers.
The marketing, yeah.
Because if you're marketing that part of the film so largely, in my mind, I believe this person has a large part in the film.
Totally. I mean, it would be like taking something and branding it Tim Burton.
Ooh.
But then ending up with, have y'all seen those commercials for Trolley Sour Worms?
Which ones?
They are just the worst. It's all claymation, but it's the worst. And it's like a tree in the sewer eating something, and then like these demented worms singing a stupid song. They're bad. Go look them up later. The gummy worms are actually good, but the commercials are horrendous. But it's sort of like, because it's, you know, a dark and twisted claymation, putting Tim Burton's name on it and expecting something of the quality level of Tim Burton. Or the balance, the je ne sais quoi, the balance of the nuances of with only ugliness, because I'm not a fan of his claymation. The characters are often, they also have a certain likability to them. So, I don't know. I think James Gunn obviously is not yet the next Tim Burton because he hasn't been around long enough, but he's kind of moving in that direction.
That looks so ugly.
Yeah, it's so terrible. We've got the trolley. I mean, there are several of these things, and they're
really
just terrible. Like, turn the channel when it comes on worthiness. But if you took something of that quality level and branded it Tim Burton, you're expecting something from Tim Burton's name that you're not going to get in the final product. And I think in the same way, the way that this film was marketed by using James Gunn's name so prominently, there's a certain level of expectation, I think personally, that needs to be met in order for people to walk out of the theater like fully satisfied. The only way that I would say it doesn't need to be met is for people who actually don't know and don't care who James Gunn is.
Yeah, 100%. And I agree with that completely. What do you think, Spence?
I guess honestly.
Yeah, don't just agree because I agree. I want to know.
I don't know. I just kind of take like things as they come. Like,
He's been jaded by the Russo brothers. That's why. He's like, if it's in the trailer, it's not going to be in the movie. None of these scenes are in the movie. This isn't even about the Avengers anymore.
Yeah, it's like, about Squirrel Girl. When like, it gets to crunch time in the MCU, all the trailers are just fake news. I don't believe anything in now.
Fake news.
But
it's true, though.
I don't know. I guess I just don't really figure that like a director is going to use like the same types of tone across all of his movies.
Yes,
it could just be like one of those things I never really noticed before.
Whoa! Did you just interrupt yourself with a cough?
That's, you know what, and I
good job, Spencer, just talking right over him.
No, I can agree to that to a certain extent, but there are also certain directors who have that certain style.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're being. That's why they were brought on the film to do. Like, you take a look at somebody like Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino is brought on to do a Quentin Tarantino movie, which means there's going to be a lot of cussing, a lot of blood, a lot of drug use, and there's some like complete subtext that he won't explain until 10 years later.
Totally, and a lot more blood.
Exactly. you look at, you know, some of the
great... That's why I'm really interested in like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Every time I keep seeing a trailer to that, I'm like, all right, so this isn't then about that. It's not about these two guys. It's actually about Charles Manson. Okay, I don't know if I want to see this.
I don't know.
But like, you look at people like, you know, David Lynch. David Lynch is brought in to just be weird. Terry Gilliam is another one who's just so unique. You have like Denis Villeneuve. You have not Tony Scott. He's passed away, right? Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott, yeah, is the one who's still with us and awesome because he made the best movie ever made.
Gladiator.
That's right.
I think there's a certain, yes, a director should never stick to just one style if he's not 100% successful with it.
And I think the other thing with the marketing of this film, it's not entirely clear that James Gunn is not the director.
100%.
Or that James Gunn didn't write the final script.
Also true.
Like, with his name so prominently, like, they're his name is in many respects the draw for this movie in terms of the way the marketing plays. But he did not appear to play the kind of guiding behind-the-scenes role that you would expect, and I think it shows.
I agree 100%. It's the thing, like, bottom line for me, I think it's just poor marketing. It was completely poor marketing because, in all honesty, I didn't do as much research as I should have coming into this film because I didn't know if it was based on anything or who any of the, like, the actors. Everybody knows Elizabeth Banks. Everybody knows Roy from The Office. I mean, it's a kid. There's not much else in the film. It didn't look like there was any other prominent characters. So I'm like, all right, that's whatever. The fact that James Gunn was flashed so many times, I'm like, okay, this is my expectation set by what the trailer, which that's a job. That's the job of a trailer, is to give you a sense of the movie. Giving me that piece of information created another piece of, like, another sense of what I should be expecting with the film based on that. Unfortunately, that was nowhere to be even seen. And after the fact, finding out that his whole role in the film was just a producer, you know, and not even a writer.
I mean, he probably had some influence on the story because it's his family that wrote it, but...
True.
Very, you know, true. It's sort of like, it also reminds me a little bit of, even though people didn't receive the first one super, super well, but Pacific Rim, right?
Yeah.
Your boy?
Yeah, my boy, right. Guillermo del Toro.
Thank you. With the first one, and people didn't receive it super well, but then you get to the second one, Pacific Rim Uprising, and he's no longer writing the story or directing the film, and it shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he even gave a launch pad, right? He did the first one. So, like, lather, rinse, repeat, people. Just do something that's sort of a little bit one-upping that, and they did just all the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, his name could still be attached to it because it was from the mind of...
Guillermo del Toro.
There you go. Because that's legit. But then, like, the payoff, it didn't work.
Yeah. And mind you, like, that's a whole nother grieving point, honestly. The whole, what do you call it? I'm drawing a blank. See, that's how bad that movie was, the Pacific Rim film. Because that movie could have been so much better. And had they followed already the formula that he already created, allowed that to be kind of the structure as to how you move forward creating a sequel, and even the third, which I don't even know if they're going to go with the third. They said they are, but who knows? Mm-hmm. Needless to say, I don't know if I want to see a third film, quite frankly.
Probably not. Would you see a second Brightburn? Because there are allusions to...
There are...
A continuing unrolling of this landscape, so to speak.
By the way, Pacific Rim Uprising is lesson 107, so if you want to check out that review.
Oh, look at that. Nice plug.
Yeah. I learned from the master. See, I don't know. Because here's the thing. I really like the mythos, if you will, of Superman. Especially the Man of Steel story structure. Like how
grittier, more modern.
Exactly. Yeah. And I really liked how that set up what was before the rest of the DCEU started. I liked what it did in terms of creating the foundation for a Superman in that world. I liked how there was heavy influences on recognizing, like, the key decisions that he had to make growing up, recognizing, like, sometimes you can't save everybody for the sake of, you know, protecting those you love. You have to do these things, you have to do those things, you know, and kind of transitioning all that into him becoming the Superman that is at the end of the film.
Right.
I really like that.
Now, he happened to have come from good stock, you know.
Oh, yeah.
His biological family were like the do-gooders on a dying Krypton, mm-hmm. right? And then his adoptive family were good people.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's something to be said for what you weave into the like very primordial kind of core of the character.
Yeah.
That seems to maybe not have been the case here.
Completely. And I think with this, they tried to create a similar parallel that went all the way, like, side by side up until they did the revelation part of, like, telling the child where his origins came from. And then that's when the films went in completely different directions. And it's one thing to be like, okay, I'm from a different planet. I need to figure this out. I need to whatever. But you know your child. And I'm pretty sure if you know that your kid is already having issues prior to, or already having those types of things, maybe telling him that he has the power to overtake the entire world is probably not the best
piece of parenting advice. He's going to figure it out.
Then you wait.
Wait for what? No, that's the problem of the whole movie is people wait and they do nothing and then everything is just bad. Like, talk to people and learn information and maybe something good will happen.
That's actually true. Spencer said that right as soon as we got out of the movie. He was like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. Why didn't anybody talk to each other?
No,
this is why marriages are failing in America. Nobody talks to each other. But it's a good point. I don't know. Like, I almost feel like he was sent to Earth to be a destroyer.
Well, he was. That's what his spaceship was trying to tell him to do.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know. There's a lot of directions that this film goes. Like, in terms of just from being, and I know Chad can probably attest to this as well, just from a teaching perspective, being a prior educator and, like, having worked with kids, there's a certain point in time where you, as the parent, have to have that one-on-one talk with your kids. Like, you know what? This isn't cool. This is who we are. This is what we believe. I really need you to be on board and hear what I'm saying and not like all of a sudden just out of nowhere like, oh, well, he's fine. That's just the way he is. Or, oh, the, you know, kids will be kids. Or, oh, you know what? He's just a growing boy. He's just like, no, your kid just hurled a lawnmower like two football fields down the way. There's nothing okay with that.
Well, see, the thing is they didn't know about that because he didn't tell them because they don't talk. It all Spencer's comes really circling around.
I'm loving this. I love charged up Spencer. Tell me more.
No, because that's like the whole just problem with like this movie is that it's just a series of avoidable events for the most part.
is this the next Lemony Snicket's book? A series of unavoidable events.
Because like, most of these things could have been avoided if they would have just said something from the beginning. If they had like more open dialogue with Brandon, like he would have been like a bit more honest coming back, where it's like, "Ooh, I feel this way and this way about stuff." Like that's how you like help your kid grow up. I would assume. I'm not a parent, but that was just would be my overall impression of like how you would be a parent is you talk to your child and not just look at something they do and be like, we don't do this. You're fine. Like that's not gonna turn out well in my opinion.
And it's true. Like it's one of those things where it's like you have to honestly be honest with yourself and recognize, you know what? There is something deeply concerning. Like I think Roy, and I'm just gonna call him Roy because he's Roy from The Office. I think Roy was like right on the money, was like, honestly, this kid fell from the sky. He looks like us, and yes, we raised him, and we're not negating the fact that we are his quote-unquote parental guardians, but we don't know anything about him. He could all of a sudden turn in, like, just create this cocoon of himself at age 12 and a half and then turn into this, like, massive Godzilla monster for all we know. Like, it's the honest truth. And she's like, oh, how dare you say that about our son? Oh, my God. It's like, well, no, he's not.
To be not wrong. Really honest, this is a conversation they should have had 12 years ago. Not 12 years into we decided to be this kid's parents. Like, well, this is way too late. Like, you should have, day one, what are you going to do? Oh, maybe we should send him off to, like, the government or something so they can figure out where this spaceship came from. Like, because yeah, you're right, he could just turn into a cocoon and be, like, a giant Mothra for all they know.
He could.
Like, he could be allergic to water. You don't know anything about this kid. Wow,
now we're getting into M. Night Shyamalan here. Come on.
Okay, I was not bringing him up, but I'm just trying to point out, like, they know nothing about him or his physiology.
No, it's very true, and that's
kind of... So basically, they're incredibly irresponsible from the first moment.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Series of avoidable events.
And I think it's safe to say that this... Mind you, it was written as such to have the mother character kind of turn a blind eye to the fact that her son may be this killing machine. It's just like, I think...
Way to equivocate. Turn a blind eye to her son may be a killing machine.
It's like, come on. I think the believable aspect of this film should have, that part should have been pushed back a little bit towards the middle, and not after the fact when she decides to let her husband go out into the middle of the woods with this kid, hoping that
for their heart to heart,
to have their quote unquote heart to heart, when the dad's already been like shoved through a wall and pushed through God knows what, and like had his chickens, you know, eviscerated by this kid, you know, and he knows it. I don't know. It's like, if you were concerned about the wellness of like people around you and whatnot, that those are the kind of things you kind of like attack early on, not wait until, well, yeah, you know what? Did he really though kill that lady in the place? Did he really break her arm? I think she's just faking her. Like really, like there was a sense of like disbelief that her son could do these things when they literally saw him chew on a fork.
No, only the dad saw that, and he said nothing to her about that.
Are you sure? I thought he did say something.
Not until way too late.
Huh.
Which is an ongoing thing with this movie.
Spencer is a man of action.
That he is.
Like, and now is the time. Tomorrow.
No, see, if you think your kid is going around killing people, now is the time to say something.
I don't disagree with you.
What? That is the one thing, like... The parenting in this movie, like, I know I don't have kids and I know nothing about parenting, but I am pretty sure this is not how you do it. Like,
given the results, I think that most people would be inclined to agree with you. I've never been a parent, but I'm pretty sure this isn't how you should do it.
This is not the way you should go for this. And I think there's something to say about the fact that the director of the film, which... I had no idea this person was the director, David Yaroveski, who, looking at his filmography, aside from Brightburn, hasn't really done much else. He did a movie called The Hive back in 2015. It was a British film about a man who's been infected with a virus. Essentially, it's a movie about a hive. There's not much else to it. But I've never heard anything about it.
And I mean, you got to start somewhere, but it's hard because James Gunn aside,
yeah,
you also have the familiarity with the Superman mythos.
True, very true.
Itself, which has been told and retold and retold for nearly a century by this point, right? And so it's fine to... do your hypothetical, like, well, what if instead of being with a good family and a good background and whatever, he was demented, tormented, bullied, you know, whatever, and one thing led to another, and suddenly he was a villain instead of a hero. Like, what would it be like to tell that story?
Yeah.
And I think at its core, that's a really interesting hypothesis.
Very true.
Mm.
But then because of the power set of the character, it's hideously terrifying. To think about, like, okay, wait a minute, though. Like, if Clark Kent, not Brandon...
Beyer,
whatever. If Clark Kent didn't grow up right, I don't know how to explain it, but, like, if all the things, the laser vision, the invulnerability, the super strength, the super speed, all that stuff,
yeah,
was slowly shaped in a negative way instead of a good way, and he didn't rein himself in, he didn't really control himself the way that, you know, Jonathan Kent and Martha Kent trained and taught him to do, so that he could grow up and have a decently normal, happy life that he could also, you know, help people in or whatever. Like, what would that look like? Even with somebody like Clark Kent, that's a terrifying proposition.
Right.
Yeah. Let alone a different character in a different universe with people pulling the strings that have a much different agenda and a different, like, threshold for gross.
For gross.
Gross.
And mind you,
we're talking, like, land on the man and splat. We're talking slow laser to the face that bubbles it and goos it before it's done. Like, gross. Gross. It is not fondue.
And it's true. You're like, right on the money. Like, I really do believe... this film hits on a lot of what we have come to already see with things like the Man of Steel, the Superman mythos, like going back to Man of Steel, that does a great job of like highlighting the fact that at certain points in time, he wanted to use his powers. He wanted to hurt these people. He wanted to lash out after being bullied. And yet, Pa Kent and Ma Kent came in and, you know, used their moral...
Salt of the earth.
Exactly, and grounded him back in, saying, you know what, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And really made it make sense to him.
And here, to Spencer's point, these parents are morons.
Yeah, where was that?
No moral compass.
His parents were morons.
Well, they were. They were really bad.
Call a spade a spade.
But mind you, I think the fact remains is that there was an attempt to be made to create something. I mean, you have to admit, there was an attempt to be made in creating something unique for this particular mythos that has been popular since the late 30s, early 40s, and I see Chad barely holding it together.
I just, that phrase to me always says everything.
What's that?
An attempt was made. I always think of the goofy, like, misshapen star meme, where it's like, it doesn't look really anything like a star. It's kind of a weird blob with sort of 5 points, and it's like, an attempt was made. Like, that is always the funniest comment that I can ever think of to assign to something in terms of evaluating the quality of it. Like,
yeah.
Well, an attempt was made. Like, it's so basic. It's like beyond basic. It's so good. Sorry, please continue.
No, just the fact that like there was an attempt to be made, and in the attempt, you can appreciate the uniqueness of it, but recognizing how short this film falls in terms of creating something palatable to a larger audience, that's probably the biggest issue this film has, is that you have to, it's a film that's being offered to a major audience that only works with a very small niche audience. Like, not everybody likes the massive amounts of blood and gore. Like, you got people who are getting their whole lower jaw ripped off. You got things where people are getting, oh my gosh, when he kills his dad, spoiler alert, but when he kills his dad, like, burrowing like two laser beams right through his skull slowly, you know, or...
Well, it was his dad's fault.
Well, his dad was trying to do God's
also,
work.
Also, the okay? boy has no conscience.
No.
His dad was doing God's work.
All right, like, we need to back up because there's two problems here. One.
There's more than two, but please continue.
One. Like, this dad, so-called dad,
Roy,
shoots his kid. Like, he was trying to kill him. Like, so, like, I'm kind of, like, not really surprised that the kid laser beamed him to death. Especially since he tried again when the first time didn't work. That was nonsense. And then the second thing was that, like, throughout the movie, you can tell, like, the spaceship is affecting Brandon in some way, like, turning him on this path, which, you know, you should have been noticed by his parents a little bit more. Like, there was one throwaway line by Elizabeth Banks. He's like, he doesn't normally act like this. Like, really? Like, I feel like you should investigate that line of thinking more, because, like, you might end up with an answer that's helpful for your child. But
it ain't her child.
That's very true.
They picked that thing up in the dirt.
No, she keeps claiming to be, like, his mother. Well, you need to be a mother and actually figure out what's going on with your child.
Jerry. I feel like that's where this conversation is heading. I just, it's true. Like, yes, there are a lot of parenting faux pas in this film. And when you're dealing with something that could possibly very well have the ability to take over the world and do very evil things, yeah, you just have to be a little bit more of a responsible caregiver. I agree. But in the same sense, they just were not ready to be parents.
All I have to say is,
nope.
It's kind of really absurd, though, to be like, parenting faux pas and what, like, this is a gross mess. It's a gross mess. That's what it was meant to be. It's a gross freaking mess. Well, let's talk about nature versus nurture. They're both gross. It's all gross.
Wow. Well, obviously,
It's a darn spaceship.
This film, it's really kind of just all over the place. And the film does end with a very interesting direction to take that.
The door is open to continue telling these stories.
Well, and that's, I think that's a good question to kind of cap this conversation. Do you guys think there will be a sequel? Spencer, what do you think?
I don't know. Like, if it's doing well, they might try to make one.
Well, do you think they will make one?
Well, like, it's really about how well it does at the box.
Because there's
office.
A lot of movies out there that nobody asked for that they keep making sequels to. So
is the truth.
I'm just saying. What about you, Chad?
I think they probably will. I mean, it's already more than doubled its
budget
in the first weekend, going up against a big name like Aladdin, well, Disney Studios. So I think they probably will make a new one. I think they need to. It's just it's a specific audience, and people who like James Gunn's more mainstream things. You probably aren't the audience for this story or any continuations of this story, whether it's a sequel directly or a spinoff where they're like, oh yeah, the evil Aquaman, the evil Wonder Woman, whatever, like,
which they do make mention at the
end
of the film.
That kind of stuff, you know, like maybe they're tangent properties or whatever, but still, like, I think the most unexpected aspect of the film was how unbalanced it was.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I mean, I get it. It's meant to be a horror movie, but it's also meant to fit in the superhero genre, and it really doesn't. Like, aside from the fact that the kid has Superman's power set, basically, and the very generic, like, building blocks of Superman's story, it's not a superhero or supervillain movie. It's really more of a horror movie.
I agree completely.
So, like, tell people that and make sure that any, like, spin-offs or sequels or prequels or whatever you want to do, because they likely will, because it's made its budget back and then some, and it's not even really been out that long. So, like, tell people, this is a horror film. This is Saw 17 or whatever. Like, just people should know that going in, I think.
Well,
that it's not just about the suspense and the tension. Like, it's also gross.
It's also gross. You hear that, Spencer? It's also gross.
Gross.
So as we wrap up this conversation, let's go ahead and go around the table and see, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? And I want to go ahead and start with Spencer, because I want to see his take and then laugh at it.
Yeah, that's kind of your
whatever,
role.
Scoob.
Right?
Yeah, this movie passes for me. Yeah, I'll agree with you. I did not expect it to take such a gory turn in this movie. That's not what I was expecting. But I did find the movie overall, like, pretty interesting, with, like, just really great lessons on what not to do in parenthood.
Getting parenting advice from James Gunn.
You know, just what not to do with James Gunn.
Don't take alien babies out of spaceships.
Leave the alien baby to the government.
If you do, don't bring the spaceship home.
Right?
Well, I like that spaceship would have worked probably across the planet because it's a spaceship. Like, it should have.
Now you're range. Getting very meta.
Now you're getting into, now you're getting into the brother.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll give this 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. What about you, Chen?
This movie fails for me.
Ooh.
And I'd be hard pressed. They hypothesized a different take on the Superman story, and that might get it one monocle, but the execution of that story was just unpalatable to me. Like, I don't know. I'm a firm believer of, like, certain things you're just not supposed to see. You're just not supposed to let into your life. And some of the stuff that happens in this film are on that list.
Was it the waitress?
Yeah. They done found where he put her, didn't they?
I actually forgot she was missing once, like, I just saw her there. I was like, who's that?
Yeah. Nasty. Gross. Eddie, how about you?
I am... I don't normally do this, but I'm actually going to pass... I mean, fail the film. I think in what it attempts to do, it falls short very much so. It doesn't actually give me a sense of, like, this is a whole nother parallel universe that could possibly launch into this. I didn't feel like there was a strong enough leg to stand on there. However, with that said, I am going to give it 2.5 monocles. I like the idea of the film. I liked the possible, like, who knows what could happen from here type of mindset. I just don't think the director of this film, nor the marketing team, whoever was on this film, should come back for the sequel. Because of the fact that they both did a horrible job. And if they do a sequel, let's actually work more on the writing part of it and building a story out rather than just, let's just put these people together and see what happens kind of thing.
Gross.
So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. You can also check out all our previous episodes at filmlosophers.com, where we have 163 episodes of great goodness movies and stuff like that. And check us out. We've mentioned a few of them here in the episode. If you want to check out those, they're all on the website at filmlosophers.com. Before we go, I did want to mention that we did have an announcement to make, and that announcement is that Mr. Chad Riley will actually be departing, but not leaving forever.
I'm taking my monocle with me.
He's taking his monocle with us. And we'll be leaving the podcast for a little bit of time. Chad has a lot of great family thing or great life things that are going to be happening.
That's right.
And he's going to be embarking on a new chapter and what he's got going on.
I'm getting married, folks.
So we're going to have something fun and special planned for next week. And then we're going to have something planned for his last day, which his last episode will be in 2 weeks.
Yes.
So with that episode coming up,
obviously, I'll still come and bug you guys from time to time.
Oh, definitely. And we're going to have to pull Chad in to do certain episodes. And, you know, with the next MCU chapter coming in, obviously Chad will be here quite frequently. And the door and the seat will always be available to him. So,
plus that new Sonic movie, you gotta be.
Oh my gosh! Did they push back a year?
Oh my gosh! Let's not even.
You guys, I think we gotta do something different and get it right. Maybe
right?
They'll fail.
So obviously, Chad has been a huge part of this podcast, and we're gonna be missing him dearly. But we will get to those words and all the other great stuff with the next coming weeks. So just so you're aware, let us know if you actually have enjoyed Chad on the podcast, or if you've actually enjoyed hearing his voice, or if you just,
just didn't like him at all,
or if you've gotten if you've had grievances since the first episode and you've wanted to air them out, throw them on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers. We'll have a post up there, and you can put all your content on there and all your words and whatnot. So,
aww, as a wedding present, you can drag me through the mud. Thank you.
But this was an awesome conversation. And mind you, movies are always a great thing for us. We always get a great opportunity to see movies, talk about movies. That's one of the blessings about having this show, this podcast. And yeah, we're excited to see what is in store for Chad. We're excited to see what's in store for the Filmlosophers. And we'll let you know as the coming weeks come about. So
it's going to be fun. You guys are going to do great.
So
it's going to turn into the Hunger Games on this podcast.
You will win, Spencer.
So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Shaggy.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.
Right?